Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFORadio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. You are watching Believe the live stream, and tonight is a very, very special episode because I am joined by two very fascinating people who have been out doing the fantastic work over at AYR, Australian Yowie Research, and they have been really putting in the hard yards these last couple of months, and they've really started to reap their rewards. So I'm going to get these gentlemen on the show right away. Tonight, I'm joined by Gary and Buck, both from AYR. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
It is fantastic to have you on, guys. So I'm going to give you both a really softball answer to start tonight's proceedings with and basically ask you, how did you get into the research field for and looking for Yowies? Gary, I'll start with you, mate.
For sure, mate. So, yeah, I've always been interested in paranormal topics, paranormal subjects most of my life, pretty much since I could think about it and communicate about it and have conversations about it. I've always been very interested in the subject. And it's just snowballed from there. So, be it ghosts or ETs or now Yowies / Bigfoot, I've been interested heavily in Yowies for the last 6 or 7 years, and along with Dean for the ride with Buck for the last couple of years, 2 years or so.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. And now, Gary, you actually feature on an episode of Believe quite early in the piece where you had an encounter on the Queensland border, I believe.
I did out at Mount Lindsay there on the Queensland, New South Wales border, where a mate and I got screamed at. We got hit with possible infrasound, and we had three of these beings coming in from three different directions. And when we were screamed at, that was roughly about 10 metres behind us, behind a big wall, Lantana. So very, very close, and we could hear this being stomping around the column. And that kicked it off, and from there it's just all an ass down a train track.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those types of encounters that just sticks with you, and you kind of get bitten by the bug, so to say, and now you're one of the key researchers down at AYR, which is fantastic. Let's head over to you, Buck. How did you get started into the world of Yowies and in the research side of things?
It's a long story. We've always had a genesis of, if you're looking at your backstory, is that something happened to us. And like when I was young, I think a lot of people know, I went out running one night. I was trying to build up muscles to impress a girl. Didn't get the girl, but I do cross-country running at night at a place called Lake Sampson Vale. And an area called Forgan Cove, I heard footsteps behind me and I thought that they were my own footsteps. And when I decided I'd just check that, like I stopped suddenly, I just heard a pat pat behind me. And that was it. I took off. I was just in fear of my life and I ran up a hill and the dogs went burko up on top of the hill. Now, that's nothing, you know, in context. But then there were also these other incidents of high strangeness in that area. And the next one that occurred was quite frightening. And not, I wasn't in any danger, but it was just frightening. I was 18 months later with my best friend. He's got his car license, so he's just hooning around, and we have to get back at 10 o'clock or he will be grounded. Now, there's five people in the car and we're on the same stretch of road, but it's down near an area called Bullocky's Rest. And he said, I've got to get the car back. So he stops and he does a U-turn to go back towards Young's Crossing Road. And as the lights swing out across the dam, I see this big, it looked like a termite mound, just plonked by the side of the road. Never seen that before. I go down there all the time. And as it went past, it stood up and I went, what's that? And he stopped the car and said, what's what? And this thing just walked behind this Datsun 180B and it blocked out the rear windscreen. And the whole cabin filled with a stench of rotting garbage. It was just disgusting smell. And we were banging on the seats going, go, go, go. And they hadn't seen anything, but I was in the back with two of my good friends and their sisters. And we were just pounding on the back of the headrest going, go, go, go. And the younger sister on my right-hand side, she just buried her head in her hands and her lap and was just screaming, the eyes, as we took off. Now, I didn't know what that was. None of us knew. We kept saying, what about the eyes? And then we were shut down by the older sister going, she's freaked out, leave her alone. And this also then couples in with another story just around the corner at Lake Kawamba, where some acquaintances were camping. And I got to hear this story through at my best friend's house. His brother's girlfriend was saying, what do you think of this, Buck? I said, what? And she said, my brothers came home camping with their cousins and they were all upset. Something came out. I went, what? And she said, her brother went off to answer the call of nature. And then he looked up and he just saw this great big hairy creature. It was about 8 foot tall and it walked towards him with glowing red eyes. And he walked backwards into the fire. Everybody saw it and they left. And they just tipped up at the house and they're in such a state that the men folk, uncles and brothers and fathers said, we'll go sort this fellow out. Well, they went down there and they're told by the kids that all they saw when they left were a pair of giant hairy legs walking around the fire. When they got there, everything was in a disarray and there was big giant footsteps around the fire in the ash and sand. And they thought, well, we'll come back in the morning and we will take some plastic casts. And when they came back in the morning, all of that was swept clear and the tent was folded up neatly. And they thought that maybe one of the parents had decided this is too much, we're not going any further, and he'd come back early and just wiped everything clean. Now, that just stuck with me, along with a couple of other things that happened with friends. And it wasn't until I stumbled on to Dean Harrison's website. Hi, Dean. Shout out to Dean. That it all made a lot of sense. It all made a lot of sense. And I just got involved by going on the forum and I decided I'd try and do my own little expedition. So there's one particular encounter with Jason Garlick and he was on Table Lands Road. So I took myself off there and a month later Dean said he wanted to go to that road online. Did anyone want to join him? I said, yes, I do. And so that's how I got involved back in 2005. It was from those early things that happened to me that I wanted answers. Well, I'm still going, I'm still searching for answers and I'm waiting to have Gary's experience of screaming at me. Because mine would be quiet.
Very, very loud.
Yeah.
So, okay, both of you have had quite profound experiences with Yowies before going into the field, and I think that's something that's really important, that these encounters really didn't scare you out from wanting to find out more about them. Because, like, let's have a talk about your encounter there, Gary. Yours sounded like it was, you know, very, very aggressive, to the point that, you know, it was stamping the ground, screaming at you and your mate to really get out of those locations. And for you to kind of just hold your nerve and your steel and continue to want to go out into the bush, you know, that's a pretty big leap. Not a lot of people do that. You know, I've spoken, and yourselves, you know, you've probably spoken to way more people, let's be honest, about Yowie encounters. And you probably find a good chunk of those people who have these encounters don't want to go back out into the bush or anything like that.
Yeah, Craig, mate. I mean, like, I'd be lying if I said I didn't get scared. Yes, I do get scared. But there is an element of control about it as well. And probably for the most part, it's more a very nervous excitement when these instances do occur. So, yes, when we got screamed at, it was the loudest thing I'd ever heard. And from 10 metres away, something with such a lung capacity and such a volume, it rattles the bones. Like, you actually feel it, like when you're at a concert and the sound vibrations hit you in the chest. It's exactly like that. The only problem is, like, the scream basically goes from a very deep, like, guttural sound, like a death metal vocalist, and then very, very quickly gets very, very high-pitched. But the volume is something that you just can't describe unless you experience that yourself. Yes, I hold my nerve, but obviously it takes a lot of courage to stand there and cop it and see what else happens. There are times when we've been out in the field with Bark and Dean where you hear something massive, a big branch snap right behind you, and you just want to run, but you hold your nerve. And the good thing about with these new thermal cameras as well, because obviously sometimes when there is something heavy in the bush, like some of these roos, as you know, do get quite big. And with these new thermal cameras, you can turn around and say, well, it's just a big roo. Other times, as we now know twice now, they're not roos. For example, like when we captured the first thermals, which is on the same ridge line that Buck with his thermals, which is basically what kicked off us venturing out for a night expedition on this particular ridge. So those thermals, like, so that night that I got those thermals, it sounded like a bulldozer coming down the hill. Very, very low heat signature. Couldn't really see too much because basically with multiple beings coming down on all fours, and as you've seen in those pictures, like the shoulders are quite hot from moving around, from going down all fours, which on this same ridgeline we have found knuckle impressions in the ground as well. So when these beings come down, as I said, it's like a big bulldozer that pushes through the bush. You know, once you realise what it is, yes, the nerves kick in, the adrenaline kicks in, your legs shake a bit. Pretty much for the first time that you actually see one, yes, you find the footprints, you hear the growls, you see the tree structures, the stick symbols, the X markers, that kind of thing. And you've been screamed at from 10 metres away, and that's profound in itself. But when you actually see these beings come down and actually watch them through the thermal camera, it's like a sense of reality kicks you in the butt. Like, yes, these beings actually are 1,000% legitimate. You weren't hearing things when you got screamed at. These 18-inch footprints do belong to something. Something is making these big tree structures. So it is it's a case of a very nervous excitement where you can hold your ground, hold your courage, and do the best you can, really.
Yeah, that's exactly how tourists get eaten by lions. You're just looking through a camera going, yeah, that's great, chomp.
That's right.
Here we are. So, yeah, it's an odd feeling being out there because it's pitch black and we prefer to go out, and we've said on a number of appears now that we use red light, Dean had rightly suggested that we start using white light and giving away our positions. And just if we need any light, it's just a low red light down by our feet, just so we're not tripping over and hurting ourselves, dropping the expensive equipment or making extraneous sounds. So we move about quietly and as silently as we can. Dean's actually the quietest. I will trip over something to just ruin it. But it's certainly a feeling when you're out there going, what the hell am I doing? You know, it's 9 degrees. I'm freezing. I hope I see something. But more often than not, until we've got the extra cameras, it's been relegated to tree breaks and footprints and stuff that is really hard to show people outside of the experience. But the heat signatures, they can't outrun light, and they certainly admit it in terms of their own body heat, and we've captured that. So we just have to push on and get finer and finer details to present a body of evidence that people run out of excuses to refute.
Yeah, it's truly fascinating because I always wonder what the process is for you guys, because I have this weird brain. Like I think about the situations probably a little bit differently to how it I don't know, maybe how you guys would do it, because I don't know, is there a checklist of things that you guys do before every time that you go out? Like it's all right, when we do this, we do that, we do this. What's the process behind that? Because it's really interesting.
Something happened that we need an evac, you know, like someone breaks a leg or gets bitten by a snake, you know, because there's plenty of them out there. So there's lots of equipment checklists that are done. Gary and Dean will put their heads together and work out the best areas to enter into for, you know, an overnight expedition. And that's Gary is like a mountain goat, so he's herring up and down, you know, hill and dale, trying to find the most active areas. So because we're trying to create this intersect, and it's the intersect of where this creature will cross your path, and if you're lucky enough, you'll see it again. Like when I got that heat vision, I hadn't had anything like that since I was 16, and so I've been longing to have these encounters where I can look at it and be closer to finding some answers. And this is the best way to do it, is getting out in the field, and Gary and Dean do the hard yards.
That's exactly right, mate. And when you say, are there protocols and checklists that we go by, the number one checklist that Dean will tell you is never forget your radio. Good reason is if you do go out to these places, and some of these places are extremely remote, and what people don't understand is some of these places we go to are that thick, and we actually make our own way through the bush. So it literally is us pushing for hours and hours, pushing our own way through the bush to get to these locations. There's no trails, no tracks. There's no ranger trails, no fire trails. It's literally us pushing through the bush. And when you're in these certain situations, and sometimes you do split up, like, say, for example, if you see something interesting to the right, one of us may disappear off to the right for a little bit just to check something out. So a key point is, yes, never forget your radio. Protocols are, mate, to get to camp. Once we've established a campsite, get camp set up, obviously, first thing to do. So that's done, ready to go, nothing to worry about, be that tables, hammocks, whatever we're doing. And then once we've done that, then we'll go off with our radios in generally 3 or 4 different directions, just while there's still daylight, and have a bit of a scout around and see what we can find within the immediate area. And when I say the immediate area, sometimes that could be 100 metres, sometimes that could be half a kilometre down into the bush or down a trail that we do find. And once we've done this, we have a protocol that we just basically sit or just be by ourselves for sort of half an hour or so. And the reason for that is to put it bluntly, to become one with the bush. Because as we all do, we all live in cities and that kind of thing. Most of us do, or just outside of cities. But there's still lots of hustle and bustle and cars and buses and trucks, that kind of thing, bikes and whatever. So our ears obviously get tuned into those kind of sounds and those kind of surroundings. So when we go into the bush, we go for half an hour or so by ourselves, alone, not together for the most part. And it's just a case of tuning into the bush. And after about 20, 25 minutes or so, you'll start to notice your hearing gets better, your smell gets better, your eyesight gets better. Because you basically just, you're tuning into your surroundings, basically fine-tuning the home theater on your stereo at home to get that yeah. Optimum. So once we've done that, we then come back to camp, collaborate, have a bit of a chat amongst ourselves, a bit of a joke, a bit of serious talk, and establish the protocols for not what we're going to do, who we're going to partner up with, how far we're going to go, where are you going to go, did you see anything of interest? And once we sort of establish these sort of things, these days, from what I have noticed since joining these guys, is that now that we have these points established, things just kind of get on a roll. We don't even think about it. We just get there, bang, 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 and we're automatically doing these protocols that Dean set out, which again includes, like Buck said, with the white versus red light.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month. So protocols are in place. We kind of established that there. So what's the... I was really liking the conversation, how you're saying that you were going... more so like connecting into nature as well there. So do you think that's a really strong point to getting you guys that little bit closer to these creatures?
Very much so, mate. And the thing is, what a lot of people don't understand or may not realise is that this whole process is about communication and putting out your intention into the forest or into the bush. Regardless what people's beliefs are, We are all energy, and energy flows through everything. So once you can get there, ground yourself, and put out that positive intention of peaceful contact, things seem to progress. Not every night, but things seem to progress in a lot more positive manner because we are, every single one of us is putting out a positive intention. We are not there to cause a disruption. We're not there to cause issues. We're not there breaking things. Any rubbish that we take with us, any rubbish or anything like that we take, it goes back out with us. Nothing is left there. No disrespect to the area or to the forest, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's fantastic because you really are. You really are integrating into there. You're becoming part of it. And, you know, it's obviously having these tremendous results for you guys because it almost seems, I don't want to say like every time you're going out, you're finding something, but... You know, you're getting more hits than misses, which is really outstanding when it comes to this type of thing.
For sure. Well, I mean, what people don't realize as well, like the amount of hours that are put into this research, and the lengths that we go to when people use that term blood, sweat, tears. Apart from the tears, there literally is blood and sweat that goes into this. And with you say the expedition videos, people may watch a 20-minute video or a half an hour video, but what they don't realize is that 20-minute video consists of up to 10 hours of pushing your way through the bush. And for the most part, a good 80% of it is, again, making our own way through the bush. So, again, there's no trails, nothing like that. It's blood and sweat from climbing over waterfalls, climbing over fallen trees, going up inclines, declines, lantana, on our hands and knees. Like it literally is putting in the hard yards. So... No, it's not a case of we just go out and get lucky. There are a lot of hours and a lot of expense, money-wise and physical expense that do go into this research.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, I think that's a really big thing that people overlook. It says that the amount of, I guess, man hours and cost that goes into each of these expeditions is actually quite monstrous, because they don't realize the fact that these things don't just happen for free. You know, the services that we do, they're not for free. You know, making podcasts isn't free, and doing what you guys do isn't free either. It's everything has a cost attached to that, whether that be time, whether that be an actual monetary value. And that's the difference that you guys do, is that you actually invest into it, not just your time, but the gear and everything. And, you know, maybe training isn't the right word, but I genuinely feel like every time you guys are going out there, you're training for the next find.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's exactly right. And we, like, again, as you said, we are self-funded. We can't make money from this. It'd be great if we could, but we can't. So we all have day jobs. So when we are going off only to our day jobs, these day jobs are paying for the fuel, for the food, and for whatever other expenses that we need to put into this, into our research and into our expedition days. So when people see us actually out there carrying all this gear, like, so even for the location where Buck caught these amazing thermals, we had this massive cart full of all of our gear, tables, bags, hammocks, all the camera gear, and all of that, again, is self-funded. And then on top of that, you then got the physical outcome of dragging this stuff up mountains and that kind of stuff and setting up. There's a lot that goes into this topic that people don't understand or don't realise. Not anything against those people, because obviously all of our followers and your followers and other people that follow, say, Sarah's channel, Yao Essential, everyone, they see the good stuff. They might see a few photos of what we've gone through, but they don't see the hours and hours of grueling physical outcome, or what we've just spent $400 on here, or $100 there, or $20 there.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. Well, what we might do, mate, is how about we roll this footage, because I've got a couple of questions about it, because this is, honestly, guys, this is probably one of the most credible pieces of evidence when it comes to Yowie, to Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, ever. So what we might do is we might just roll a little bit of this clip and see if we can get it to work. So we are just playing it through from the AYR YouTube channel here. And basically it's just kind of flicking through what you initially found here, Buck. So are you able to walk us through what was going on here?
This is at the end of a 20-minute clip. So the preceding event went like this. We had the protocols. We met. Gary gave me a rundown on the thermal unit. And I went between 80 and 100 meters away from camp. And there's a crest. There's this ridge where there's this big log. And I was scoping around. I hadn't seen anything. I had no heat signatures at all. And then I saw something behind a tree. This isn't it, but this is what sparked it off. And it looked like a set of hands way down low and a head peering behind it. And it felt like something was scoping and glimpsing, and I radioed the boys and I told them what was happening, that I think I was onto something. And I said I'd bring it back, and I didn't. And so what I did was I kept that film going until you saw that earlier bit where there was something behind a stump. And that stump was really curious, but I couldn't see exactly what it was, so I decided to zoom in. And this footage that you're seeing now is the two stars of the show. Now, they came out of a big stand of foliage. I'd lost the heat signature, and then I picked something coming up through it. I couldn't even find the stump because I zoomed in so tight. And then as it's filling up my viewfinder, you'll notice that there are a whole bunch of filters that are flicked through, because this unit, if you're not using the app, and I wasn't that night, the buttons have different assignments, so I needed to stop to zoom out. So when I thought I needed to zoom out because they were, I thought I was missing it, I just rolled through these colourful filters like that one there, and then there'll be another one. So Dean's kindly slowed this down for analysis, and you can see there that's one of the frames that we've pulled that show this amazing hulking brute of a creature with a sloping forward and kind of a muzzle. Now all of that has been gleaned from those few seconds that we got those frames. Now most frames, like when you're videoing, you're like 24 to 30 frames a second, so there's not that many, but here we are looking at a great profile and I guess at one stage a front on of the creature. And what's done to me was the actual brightness of the heat signature. I expected them to be more like animals that I've seen in the bush, that their fur presents a gradation or some type of mottling. And you can see where their eyes are, you can see where their feet are, anywhere that's exposed. But this was so bright and so hot that we kind of reasoned, well, I did. I went, well, if they're that huge, their body mass must just be enormous and they're just glowing like coals in a fire. So that one is showing black is the hottest colour. So that was one of the filters I was flicking through when I was making my error trying to zoom back out. It bends down twice and picks up something. And there's... we looked back there. Well, Dean and Gary did. They couldn't find anything. And, you know, we're going with that, putting something down, picking something up. Some people have jokingly said they were going to lob a rock at me. I would have loved that. That would have been fantastic. But, yeah, look at that. That is huge. That is. Now, Gary's a big unit, but he's not that big. And, again, when I was looking through the camera, I couldn't kind of wrap my head around what I was seeing at that moment. It wasn't until back when we went and reviewed everything, we went, oh, wow, there's two, because I thought it was throwing an arm behind itself, but it wasn't until we got that footage out of the camera onto the iPhone and could slow it down, scrub it backwards and forwards, we could see what was happening. Also, too, I was a lot closer than the images that Gary had. Gary had a really hard time because they were much further away than I was, and he had to hold it steady. So we got closer, and it's through this collective work that we do, trying to get us closer to get evidence like this to present to people.
Yeah, it's truly fascinating stuff. And you know, in situations like that, the mind really has to wonder, what do you do in a situation like that? Because, you know, you gentlemen are very seasoned, you know, when it comes to this stuff. And, you know, you're out there purposely looking for this. Essentially, what's the thought process going through your mind? Because, you know, you're out looking for yowies. You see something like this. Do you go, geez, is this what we're looking for?
For me, and I'm sure it's the same for Dean and other people with a camera in their hand, we've interviewed so many people that have said, I had a camera in my bag, I had a camera. One guy we had the most incredible daylight encounter up at Bellbird Grove. He's not expecting these things. He's not ready to look for these things. He just happened to go. He had two cameras, two phones in his front pocket, and all he could do was run. So if I'm going to be in that situation where I was nearly 2 months ago, I'm not running. That's probably foolhardy of me, but I'm also there because I want to be there. I really want to be there, like Gary wants to be there, like Dean desperately wants to be there. He's always going, when can we go, when can we go? And so there's no point in going to all that effort to have all that equipment that Dean's kindly provided and upgraded over the years to not use it. And we're just happy to be able to present something other than kangaroos. And these cameras are great. They'll film microbats flying through our forest. You'll see owls, you'll see birds. And they take the guesswork out of what's going on. I thought I was hearing something approaching the other night. Great, ka-thump. It turned out to be this injured wallaby that had like half a tail missing. And well, that was sad. He was doing his wallaby thing and getting around, but his jump really made your ears prick up and go, what's that? Now, without the camera, you could wrongly assume you had the hairy man at your six, and you could walk away and just say, oh, they're there. This way you can say no. I'd rather say no 100 times than just mislead people. So, and I'm the worst person. When I got back to camp, I went, Gary, give me a heat signature. Dean, give me your heat signature. No, you're way too tall for this. But, yeah, so we will scrutinise what we do over and over again to come up with the most logical answers. We were after that and we got it. But I will say I did not know they were there. Other than a couple of early heat signatures, I could have just as well been looking on the other side of the track. So there's a lot of design to get us there, but there's also this incredible element of luck where I just happened to be looking at the right place, and then I was a complete liar. I said, yeah, I'll come back and show it to you, and then it just stayed down, and it got more and more.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people are actually asking in the comments, because this is a live stream for those who maybe listen to the audio only. And they want to know, like, was this luck? Like, was this, did you sneak up on them or anything like that? By the sounds of it, like, you couldn't hear them, you couldn't smell them, like, you couldn't sense that they were there apart from, you know, you panned and you kind of hit the jackpot.
Well, Garen Dean had a fair idea that there was activity going there by doing the hard yards and going, there's all this crazy stick activity there. And I have to be honest, I'd go, okay, yeah, you know, I'd like to see it for myself. And when I, you know, saw it, go, that is curious. And they found a lot of it within that, I don't know, 300-400 meter stretch, like lots of it. You know, that's impossible for it to all be just falling out of the sky from trees. It just doesn't work that way. Some of the sticks that Gary showed me are tiny. They're this big. They can't even break the leaf litter. How do they get jammed in the ground? Something with hands. And where we're going, it's unlikely that people are doing that. And then, of course, the cherry on top of the hairy man cake that we got was I sent you some stills earlier of Gary coming backwards and forwards to me, bringing me a chair because I've been on my feet for nearly 7 hours. And he's walking through this area where the next morning, to our amazement, were these giant sticks jammed in the ground, blocking our way, an X marker by this log where I'd been filming most of the night, and this weird little circular glyph that was on the ground. It was flat. And then another one that looked like a broken four that was pointing in the bush, or that was an interpretation. So suddenly Stickland lived up to its name, and I was the latest convert.
It would be incredibly, I don't know if like reassuring is the right word that I'm looking for here, but to see that the night before and then the next day to see this really known Yowie trait to continue around the campsite, that would kind of just be dotting the I's and crossing the T's on what you really saw then.
Yeah, we've been back a few times, and, you know, naturally we really want to make lightning strike twice. And we had a curious incident, which was kind of a take-home for me. Something happened very early on, and I was radioing Dean and Gary, frantically going, what's your position? Look, we just left camp and something crossed over from behind some plant machinery, which was put up there to clear the tracks, and went off into the bush. And I should have just been filming. It should shoot first, ask questions later. But more recently, we went back, and this great lantana stand that you've seen some of the photos is now flattened. It's like something's just rolled in there. Like there's at least 2 acres. Would you say, Gary, you've just flattened lantana? Not cut.
Yeah, it's like you've got the trail, and then you've got a thick line of bush, and then behind that is like another open area that goes probably a good 60, 70 metres all the way through the back there.
So, guys, I want to ask you, do you feel comfortable answering some questions from the listeners?
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. I'll just say just before we do that, with the question about how lucky we get wanting lightning to strike to us, when we go to these areas, it's not a case of we get a pin, just drop a pin on the map, and we'll just gather and see what happens. As Buck said, there are many hours that go into actually deciding an area, researching an area, and looking for tracks, looking for any kind of sign before we actually decide to go to that area. So, for example, with this particular ridgeline, yes, I've got my thermals, but this all started off on, people would have seen when we went kayaking over a certain area, and we got Eyeshine, Buck and another guy, Tony, actually sighted something move up in the bushes. Three of us saw green Eyeshine from probably 150 metres away. Mm-hmm. When we finished that night, also including finding the trackway and I think it was footprints, the end of that night, which would be in the morning, which would be about 4:30 in the morning, that's when we're taking the kayaks back to my van, and Dean got growled at, which is the same location that I got my thermals. So again, we use that information. We look for any kind of signs, any kind of trackways, tracks, track impressions, strange stick structures, stuff like that. So when we do decide on an area, it's not a case of drop a pin in a map and see what happens. There are many hours of actual research and looking for what we're trying to find before we actually decide on these areas.
Yeah. You know, it really is a testament to all the work that you guys do that, you know, you're not kind of just picking places for the sake of picking places. You know, there's, you know, decades of research that goes into every decision that you guys are making, and the collective history between, you know, everyone on that AYR team would be so incredibly valuable to any other type of organization that's out there, that, you know, in your field. And, you know, there's that they could probably learn a lot of things from you guys, because I'm sure there's things that you've learned that will probably blow the minds of a lot of Bigfoot researchers, you know, over in the States and things like that.
I'll answer a question which will probably be asked straight away, and that is, Gary and I and Dean will know, is people will say, how come you don't use game trail cameras? That'll be one of the first questions that's asked of us. And the reason behind that is, in terms of our experiences, particularly Dean's, is that they've used that equipment before. So in terms of learning from us, people say, you need to get out there with game cameras. That's been done, and it's yielded zero results. And the reason for that is we believe that they can possibly detect the infrared coming off it, just because that in areas of high activity they've placed a camera and it's been there ready to capture the subject coming through well-known trail, and then all activity ceases. And then what happens after that is another trail will start off earlier and branch out and come behind the unit, come behind the game camera. So we can only assume, and it is assumed because one's not in front of us, that they can detect it. And that's happened numerous times. Dean's got a shelf full of old game cameras if you want to get pictures of kangaroos and cockatoos. But no, yowies.
Well, a quick answer to that is, if you have these beings coming up to a property and you don't like it, you want them to go away, put up trail cameras. There's your answer.
Yeah, right. It's anti-yowie spray, hey? There you go. So we've got a really great question here, and this comes in from Lisa Rawson. So I'm going to try to put this up on the screen, because, Buck, you actually touched on this earlier about kind of like the high strangeness that kind of goes around with a yowie encounter. And her question is, do you feel that there's a link between Yowie and UFOs with all their research?
I think there's a corollary between the two. Like, I'm not as fortunate as Gary to have seen a UFO and heard a Yowie. But there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than we know about. You know, that's a good Shakespeare line. There's so much we don't know. You know, I found when we went to Number Bar Valley recently in January, we located this blue lobster. Now, that's not unique, but I hadn't seen one, and they live out there, and not everyone's seen one. I went, great, I've got a picture for this blue lobster. I want to share it with the world and set the world on fire with the blue lobster. I came out, and Capitol Hill was on fire. So nobody was interested in my blue lobster, so... You know, it's just, you know, there are areas that are just strange. You're going, why is this here? Why is that there? And in my mind, I go, I can only deal with one. I'm only going to go for the hairy man. And if a little grey man comes in front of me, I'll say, move out the way. I'm expecting bigger company.
Yeah, I think there's... Because there's so much in this world going on that the greater percentage won't acknowledge. And unfortunately, these aspects, be it Yowie, ET, ghosts, orbs, they do cross over, and sometimes a witness will have a sighting of a Yowie, and then there's an orb going through the forest at the same time. Or they see some strange lights in the sky. Are these two topics connected? No, we don't know. It could be a coincidental thing of there's a Yowie and there's an ET craft. It just happened to be at the same time. As we know, most people cite these two topics separate from each other. But however, yes, it does happen that odd things seem to correlate with each other or cross over.
Yeah. It's something that I hear quite a bit in encounters where people may see orbs or before or after a Yowie encounter. And a lot of people who come on the show actually say that they see these things as well. A lot of them may not talk about it because, you know, they're coming on the show to talk about their Yowie encounter. You know, that's already kind of fantastical as it is. And to say, oh, by the way, I think I saw something like an orb or a UFO floating around as well. It can already push, you know, something that's hard to talk about to that next level. So personally, I think it happens a lot more than people probably realize when it comes to these types of encounters. Just, you know, it's already so hard to talk about having a Yowie encounter, let alone seeing something else strange in that vicinity.
Like Gary, we've been to pubs and things, like where we meet up and put gear into, you know, the back of your truck. Thank you very much. But they're interested in us because we've got the Bigfoot Yowie shirt on. And if we started talking, we saw a UFO, they'd be going, hang on, these guys see everything. You know, you have a fine line of credibility with people that are naturally discerning or even skeptical. What are you going to do by bringing up other really interesting topics into that field and then muddying the water? You know, you try to explain one thing and you don't give them any answers. Then you talk about another thing and you don't give them any answers. So it's a hard thing.
The problem is these things do happen. Regardless what people want to believe and or do or don't want to believe, these different aspects do happen. So, okay, if you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to talk about it. But unfortunately, there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of witnesses. Regardless which aspect, which topic we're talking about, these things do happen. So eventually we have to talk about it. Again, like that's why Dean started his website, because he had nowhere to go. So he started his website because he needed something to basically work with, and from there it's progressed to a situation where people come to us with their sightings because they can't go to the pub. But the thing is, well, these aspects, orbs and UFOs, like we do see strange things in the bush that you can't put a finger on, you have no idea what the hell was that. Or, did you hear that? Yeah, I have no idea what that was. For example, I put out an audio recorder in Springbrook for a week, and the recorder, it recorded for 3 days straight. Now, when I was going to this location to put the recorder out, I heard some strange knocking sounds, which told me, yes, I have some friends in the forest with me. So I stopped and waited for a bit. It went quiet. I went down a little bit further, and I found two different sizes, not track impressions, but I found two different sizes of actual prints. So with a break halfway in the foot, the metatarsal break, on smaller prints, which I think they were size 12, and the bigger prints were size 16, 17. So anyway, I went around the corner, then just tucked in the tree down this trail, and put the recorder up deep inside this cut down tree. And with the rings of the tree, I actually had to bend the ring down and jam the recorder up in there, so there's no way it could have fallen down. Within 20 minutes, you hear bipedal stepping walk up to the recorder and tap the recorder multiple times. And for hours and hours after that, it'd go quiet, they come back, but you could hear bipedal walking around again, walking around again, stomping, grunting, walk up, tap the recorder again. So if you can picture the sound when someone taps a microphone, that top, top, top kind of noise.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly that. So it's pretty.
Yeah, here's another bit of High Stranger. So you can see that Gary's got the Finderer as his moniker there. There's a good reason why he's called the Finderer. He finds everything, and he's incredible. And that's when I knew that he was the man for me. I went out on one of these great trips with Dean, Gary and Jacob and a bunch of other fellas, and I had a brand new two-way radio, and when I got back to the car, it was gone. And I just thought, oh, no, another bit of gear gone. I just got the most minimal amount of use from it. And we'd all been down in this gully, and it was hard going down and even harder coming out because we'd trekked in so far. We'd heard this, we had this occasion to hear this weird mumbling and bipedal kind of walking, and I head off to try and find out what it was. And then this big bit of static came over my radio because I didn't have a headpiece and kind of gave my location away. And then it kind of ceased. And we went on with our trek. And then it was time to make a decision, would we go left or right? And we knew which way the road was. We said, if we go this way, we're just hemming ourselves in and it's going to take us forever to get out. So we went up to the road. And in that particular section, I lost my radio, but I didn't know it. And so Gary took it on his own behalf a day and a half later to go back down into that really thick bush, and he found my radio. And this is the curious part. This is the high strangeness. You go, Gary.
Yeah, so it was actually the next afternoon that I went down there. So we're talking roughly a 200-metre trek down back into a valley to a creek. So I got down roughly about 40 metres from the bottom down to the creek there, and I had the strangest mechanical – it was like a cross between a mechanical and an organic kind of strange sound. I didn't know if it was a call or if it was a sound being made by hitting something. It freaked me out enough anyway. I was still there for about 10 minutes just waiting to see if I could hear anything else. After about 10 minutes or so, I kept going. And lo and behold, I find Buck's radio clipped to a vine right in front of me. And what the issue with this is that it took me a little bit, but I found the way that we came out of this valley, I found that exact route. So I backtracked where we came out. And again, this is going up inclines of 45 degrees and flattens out a bit and goes back 45 degrees. So it literally is on your hands and knees, grabbing trees, grabbing vines, pulling yourself up out of this valley. So I backtracked down this, and it's probably another 5 metres. I went after hearing the sound that I found Buck's radio clipped to a vine. The weird thing is, Buck, see, when we all regroup, most of us turn our radios off until we then go off in a different directions again. But it's just to save battery and that kind of thing. So Buck, as you've done, we regrouped and the day's over, where we're climbing back out of the valley together to end the day. So Buck's turned his radio off, and there's his radio turned on, and there is, again, clipped to a line. Now, Buck had this radio clipped to his belt, so we're talking about a metre to 1.1 metres off the ground as you're going up an incline. The radio was clipped at about 1.6 metres, so around about chest height from me.
Right there.
Yeah, right about there, yep. So it's perfect eye line, and the problem was there's no way where Buck's radio was clipped, there's no way, even if he stood on a line and he grabbed his radio, he'd feel it get ripped off his belt and like it bounce up in front of him. He didn't do that. He felt nothing. Which is obviously the case. Like maybe when he moved his leg, it unclipped itself and it fell onto the ground. But all we can come up with is maybe the mumbler, which, as Buck said, is like a really old man. Now, this was witnessed by six of us down in this creek. A really old man with a really, really deep mumble. Very similar to that.
Yeah.
So all we can come up with is, did the mumbler watch us climb out of this valley, notice that Buck dropped his radio, and clip that radio to the vine for us, and then I'll come back the next day and
find it. So mumbler helped the fumbler.
Exactly right. So it's very strange occurrences like that. And again, like going back to my recorder, when you listen back on recording, you can hear a metal pipe that gets hit. There's no metal pipes yet. It's in the middle of the bush. And another sound that is like the teleportation sound from Star Trek. When they beam in and out of the ships from like the old Star Trek, the war kind of noise.
Wow, that's gonna make you think, doesn't it? Holy crap!
It makes you think, and then you just that's as far as you go because you got no answers for it. Yeah, but I mean, there's so many weird things out there that again, like there's no experts. We're all learning as we're going. So we just got to keep doing what we do and get what we can get.
I'm gonna ask you a question here, and we might make it the final question for the night, because you know there seems to be a lot of this high strangeness going on, because you know that radio thing, that's actually quite interesting and quite odd about how that all happens. And you know the sounds that you've captured on a recorder, and especially you know like those, as you say, those teleporting type of sounds, you know. You guys are Yowie hunters or Yowie researchers, but would you guys ever consider maybe expanding more into the unknown that goes on in the bush as well? Because do you think there may be a connection with those Yowies and that high strangeness? You know, do you think they are lending to that?
I think it expands itself. The more you go out there, the more mysteries you uncover and find. And it's hard to say what's leading what, whether we're expanding our knowledge or there's just more to find. More to find is what I think.
Mm. Yeah, and going back to these thermals on this ridgeline that I captured and Buck captured, you know, when these beings left, there was no sound. Like, obviously, they turned up and Buck around this camera, and there they are. So we have two beings of 8.5 to 9 foot tall, leaving 17-18 inch track impressions. We did go in the back and have a look around. We found 17-18 inch track impressions in the ground there. Something that size just up and disappears with no sound. And same as when I caught the first thermals down the front, it was like a bulldozer came down the side of the hill. And when it was all over, there was nothing. It wasn't like, okay, we watched them move off. And the problem was with the thermals I got, there was nothing to hide behind. Buck's thermals, they had a lot more bush and tree.
They had a lot of cover. They did have a lot of cover. And, you know, some people have said, oh, when you run after them, oh, my legs are so scratched up from the weight of wires. Like they look like someone's just drawn bush tic-tac-toe on them and it's blood dripping everywhere.
That's the problem with these cameras as well. You get blinded when you take the camera away from the side. You can't see anything. So for a couple of minutes, one eye can see, the other eye can't. So to be able to just run straight in the bush after them and you can see shadows and stuff like that with bushes through the thermal. Once you get closer, you have to adjust the focus and that kind of thing. And things become a bit more clear, but you cannot see enough to be able to just run through the bush. So,
and it's thick. It's thick.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. Like, you know, when these beings disappear, like the thermals I got, they just disappear. Like, where I was positioned and where I was watching them from, I watched two of them. One was, I could physically see one grabbing stuff out of the ground and throwing, like, with one arm, throwing stuff behind it. I watched that move left, right, and there was nothing to hide behind. But when they did, when it was all over and done with, it's like they just disappeared. So, I mean, years ago, I used to think, yes, they're animals, they're great apes, that kind of thing. These days, I believe there are people. But as for all the strange aspects, I will sit on the fence. I will not say, yes, they can do this, no, they can't do that. I'll sit on the fence because we are still learning so much. And every time we go out, we learn more. Just like these deep stick symbols, like we've researched the rune stones, trying to match up symbols with the rune stones. We're now looking into ancient Sumerian. When we went last time, we heard some possible vocals, and I was using a phrase, I can't think what it's called right now, but I was using a phrase which basically says, how are you, or how are you? And I was calling that out into the forest, how are you, in ancient Sumerian. Me, Gary, friend, how are you? Unfortunately, we got tree knocks from either side of us, but unfortunately, that's as far as it went.
Request denied. Request denied.
Yeah. It is sufficient.
Yeah. They marked you as spam, probably. Yeah. You've got to try stuff, and Gary's very, very open to just thinking outside the box like Dean is, and just trying to figure out what type of communication would they be using. The stick thing was curious for me, because if you go back to that, there was more than just a stick jamming around. It looked like there was some type of message there. And it certainly felt like that. Because it wasn't creatures being bored or animals being bored. And we do believe that they're people, that they're of a higher intelligence than people credit them for. And the indigenous folk will tell you so. They say they are a people. They're a giant race of hairy people.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I remember being taught that way back when I was very, very young. And I think that's a huge rabbit hole that we can absolutely go down, because you know, when you start to go into the Australian history of these types of creatures, it, you know, goes back to when Australia got colonized. There's so much history to these creatures, and that could be a conversation that we could have for forever. But unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time slot tonight there, gentlemen. It has gone quite quickly.
It's definitely a topic that the three of us could, like, another couple of hours we could just keep talking about it. So it's definitely, like, it gets deeper. We have a lot more stories, a lot more involvement with this research that we could just keep going and going. But thank you.
And if those questions, I'm trying to read them all, and I don't know if I can go back later and try and answer some of those. Post this, I'll do that, because there's some good questions there, but we've run out of time.
And there was a lot of really good questions on the first stream, because if you're listening to the audio version of this, this will be spliced together perfectly. That's the magic of podcasting. But unfortunately tonight we had some apparent technical difficulties on the live side of the broadcast. So Gary and Buck, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. I truly appreciate it. It's been such an honor to chat with you guys, and look, I would love to get you on again, because I feel like I could talk to you guys for hours and hours on end. You know, it's kind of just hear your war stories, and man, there's nothing better than chatting yowies.
Yeah,
what'd you say when?
All right.
Well, before I let you guys shoot off there, how about we do some plugs, because you guys got a really great community behind you, and how about you let us know everyone that's connected to AYR, and let's give them a shout out before we wrap up tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
First, Gary.
I'll go for it. So if you want to find us, you can go to yowiehunters.com. You will find Dean's website. It is insanely amazing. You'll find everything that you need to know there. All information, lots of witness audio reports, lots of map pinpoint sightings as well. A lot of information dating back hundreds of years. You can find us on Australian Yowie Research Official. Otherwise, people that we're affiliated with, and we love their support. Cade, obviously, Believe Paranormal UFO Podcast. Brent and Don over at Paranormal Portal as well. Craig Zammett, how you doing, buddy? Wes Germer as well. Cheers for your support, mate. Sarah, Yowie Central. The community we have around us is awesome. It's great. There's a lot more people. We just keep going. Yowie Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, Yowie Dan. Thank you for Yowie Times. All that hard work, you know. Yeah. And, of course, his work in Track, the documentary.
Be careful in the bush, mate. Be careful in the bush. You're out there by yourself, mate. Don't forget that.
And what we'll do, guys, is we'll leave links to absolutely everyone that you just kind of shouted out there, because, you know, I listen, I watch every single one of those things that you've just mentioned there. Everyone there is fantastic. And, you know, it's really great. We've kind of got this little community going on of dead set legends who are all just pumping each other up. I think it's the best thing that's out there, because it's, you know what it's like when it comes to the Yowie and the Bigfoot world. There's a lot of dickheads who would punch you down if they can. And, we are the complete opposite here. It's everyone's punching everybody up, because everyone's doing everyone's doing their role. Everyone's doing their part. And I think that's so important.
Very much.
Yeah. And, it's not us. Dean often says it's not up to us to prove that they exist. It's just to provide the evidence. You make up your mind. And it may not be us that goes out and gets the footage that stands the world on its head and they go, yep, they're real now. Let's move on. It may not be us, but we hope that more people do get out there and take an interest and be careful about it. Don't listen to my tips, but take an interest in what's happening out there and be part of this growing communities. There are plenty of people also looking in silence out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the best things that people can do when it comes to this field is, you know, maybe just tell someone about each of the things that each of us do, because you just never know who's going to contact me, contact you guys, contact Yowie Central about the next best big thing that just turns the world on its head. And that's how everyone helps everyone.
Well, what people have to remember as well is that with the amount of witnesses that do come forward to us, it's not just the average Joe Blow down. We have a lot of people who are business professionals, including doctors, including scientists, including military, and including police. So when you say that people are lying, don't forget you're telling thousands of people, thousands and thousands of people they're lying, and business professionals in these very highly respected positions.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's something that people don't realize. I know we've got to end it, but that's a big, big thing, is that so many people have come on my podcast, and I'm sure, well, you just said it yourself, you know, these are doctors. I've had a surgeon come on the podcast and tell me that his was a UFO encounter, but it's the same thing, you know, like it takes a lot of guts and a lot of heart to come on the show and share these things. And for someone to say, nah, it's not real, because I think it is, man, you can go get stuffed.
Well, unfortunately, the world that we are living in is the real world.
It's a slightly bigger world, isn't it, Gary? You got hairy friends out there.
It just keeps getting more. Hairy fellas, ETs, ghosts, that's the world we actually live in. It's not the world down the pub. So the world is massive, and once you open up to these ideas and these possibilities, no, you don't have to believe it, but once you open your mind to the possibility, the world gets a lot bigger than you think it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great spot to end it tonight there. Gary, Buck, thank you so much for coming on the show, guys. Let's tee this up again. Let's make this a regular thing. Because, you know, it's a lot of fun, and you guys are great to chat to. And, you know, let's get Dean
maybe
on here next time.
Coax Dino.
Yeah.
Let's coax Dino onto it.
Yeah, I think so. All right, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for everyone who was watching this and listening back to the episode. And thank you, everyone, in the comments here. You guys have been really fantastic. And sorry, we probably should have got to more questions, but time got on us because some of those answers were fantastic. So, all right, guys, thank you so much. And guys, if you do like the podcast, make sure you subscribe and share it with a friend, because you never know, the person you share it with may become our very next best guest. So, with that one there, we're going to leave it and have a fantastic night.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.